The Business Bunker with Paul Andrews.
Welcome back to the Business Bunker show here on Channel Radio. In association with Biz Radio, you're listening to me, Paul Andrews, and the stonkingly gorgeous Jules Serkin.
Hello.
If you think you missed the news, you didn't. It wouldn't play. For some reason, the newsroom went off air. So I do apologise for that, but you got a bit of Happy instead.
We've got a great tunage, though.
A bit of Pharrell Williams.
Yeah.
Sorry about that. We'll try and find out what happened to the news. Don't know. Maybe it's big news. Maybe the newsroom's had a problem.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Anyway. We're going to
maybe they're all just swigging Prosecco or something.
Yeah, probably.
It's all those bank holidays.
I was going to say, I mean, it's not as if we've just had an 18-day bank holiday or whatever it was. It did spin out for a long time,
didn't it? The Queen looked wonderful and magnificent.
Do you know, I didn't watch much of it, but I had to watch it, and I did watch it a couple of times. Was the Queen's little video with Paddington Bear.
I know, and I almost cried.
But how clever was that? Bless her. It was really incredible. Good, wasn't it? Yeah.
And I thought the, are they hieroglyphics, but the lighting and the dronage and all that was amazing. And did you see the jets that did the 70?
Mm. I did, as I say, I didn't watch much of it.
I did, I saw
but,
that.
I did watch that
but
video.
Paddington, I've watched it over and over again.
I thought it was really good. And of course now, after 70 years of reigning, the Queen's always going to be known for having marmalade sandwiches in her handbag, isn't
she? Yeah, of course.
That was brilliant.
Sticky wicket.
Yeah. And of course, for all of that, we kind of missed yesterday, because yesterday was a bank holiday in France. You know, my family live in France.
Yeah, may we?
And they were saying, oh, it's a bank holiday, yeah? And I went, oh, we've just beat you with a four-day bank holiday. But it was, of course, it was the anniversary of D-Day, which is why they had a bank holiday in France.
We should be having that as well, shouldn't we?
Well, yeah, but we'd already had 4 days. I don't think they could afford any more off, could they?
Roger.
Yeah.
Don't forget the important stuff. It was my wife's birthday.
And it was Gillian's birthday, happy birthday, Gillian Pollard. It was Jules's birthday. Last week, was it last week? Yeah, last Friday, wasn't
26th.
It?
26th. Yeah, it was Thursday, 26th
of May.
Yeah. Always is, funny enough.
Read the birthday card that I bought you.
Yes. So it says she was confused. The cookbook clearly said use leftover wine, and then the woman's looking extremely surprised. Leftover wine? it's not going to happen.
Cool. So happy birthday to both those ladies, to Gillian Pollard and to Jules Serkin, and hope you both had a wonderful time.
We did.
Good.
Yes.
My wife decided to go. We went to Proud Embankment on Friday.
Oh, yeah.
We to the All Stars Cabaret, and we had what I think is actually best described as an enlightening experience.
Cool. Okay. The Construction Expo is taking place. This is the Southeast Construction Expo on the 22nd of September at the K2 Arena in Crawley. It's the place to meet loads of construction professionals from the Southeast, London, and across the UK. 87% of business directors agree it's easier to communicate face to face than by phone, email, or Zoom. For a free ticket, go to www.constructionexpouk.co.uk. That's constructionexpouk.co.uk. Jules.
HI3 network.
High 3.
Oh, is it? Well, looks like HI3 to me, but the High 3 network in Canterbury.
HI is spelt high.
The High 3 network at Canterbury Christchurch University are teaming up to provide free business support for SMEs, or SMEs.
Obviously.
The next drop-in session is in Ashford on the 10th of June. You can book your free tickets. And they can all be booked by going to www.kentbusinessradio.co.uk, put a little /calendar. And also there's a Swanley Networking, which has just got the name Swanley Networking, so it's much easier for me to read that one. Mm-hmm. We hope you can join us on the 15th of June, so this is diary date, for our next in-person meeting for Swanley-focused businesses, and it's going to be held at the Birchfield Heights Care Home. Very handy for people like you and me, Paul Andrews.
Absolutely.
Do a little business meeting, feel a bit dizzy, and then straight into the care home.
Have a lay down, It's that's a new home as well, isn't it?
Yeah, they opened their doors a few weeks ago. Mm. So all of those networks, you've got your Seven Oaks District Chamber, which I mentioned earlier, which is June the 8th at Donington Manor. The HI3, High 3, was it High 3?
Hi, hello, hi.
But it is the letter I. Yeah, I get it. Okay, High 3. So that's network. It's far too clever for me, Sue. They probably sat up for hours thinking of that as well.
Did you? Or right. Should I say,
yes. So, High 3 Network Ashford, which is on the 10th of June, and the Swanley, you can swan into the Swanley Networking, which is on the 15th. All details, kentbusinessradio.co.uk, calendar.
Thank you. Let's hear from our next guest. I caught up with Pam Locke of Locke Associates, who are employment law, HR, well-being and mental health consultants.
Not an easy person to catch up with either.
No, very busy doing lots of interesting stuff. And we had a very interesting conversation. So let's hear what Pam had to say.
It's an absolute pleasure to welcome back onto the Business Bunker Show, Pam Locke. Pam is from Locke Associates. They are employment law and HR and health and safety and mental well-being specialists. Pam, good afternoon. Welcome to the show. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks, Paul. It's great to be here.
It's lovely to see you as always. What I'd like to talk about now, we're kind of past the Platinum Jubilee four-day weekend, and now everybody's planning a holiday. So we're approaching a holiday season. As we've seen in the news over the last few days, there are chaos at airports across the world due to staff shortages across the world. I mean, unbelievable. But I want to talk to you a bit about holidays because there's a number of things going on from an employment point of view. So let's kick off with that in terms of people booking holidays and then having them cancelled. What's the thing behind that?
Well, of course, you've got a couple of challenges there. I think you've got the situation where somebody has booked up a holiday. You've then planned as an employer to cover their holiday leave, and you might well have even brought somebody in to cover for, you know, as a temp, and you've paid costs, so you might be on the hook for, you know, having signed a contract. And then, of course, the individual says, well, hang on a minute, my holiday's been cancelled, so I don't want to go on holiday anymore. So, you know, as an employer, you're perfectly entitled to say, afraid, there's nothing you can do. You're going to have to take your holidays.
Right.
And, of course, you might then have a disgruntled employee who's not happy about the fact that the holiday got cancelled by a holiday company and they're now having to take a holiday, possibly with nothing much to do for the time they're off. So, you know, it's quite a tricky situation. But, I mean, obviously, if you've incurred costs, then, you know, quite rightly, you wouldn't necessarily want to have to pay somebody to come back to work and then take their holiday at another time.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, you've got the issue now around, well, you know, do you want to upset somebody who's perhaps a valued member of staff by saying to them, you know, you've got to take that holiday?
Yeah.
So there's a number of considerations that you need to take into account. And then the other side of it is what happens, which is what's currently happening, if your flight back gets cancelled and you get stuck, you know, overseas. And we've seen a lot of that over the last weekend. And in that situation, well, we're back to where we were. If you remember, there was volcanic ash many moons ago. There was a volcano had erupted and blown ash around the world. And there's lots of places, you know, where you were basically stranded.
Yeah.
So you're back in the scenario of, well, actually, unless you've got a laptop with you and you can work from home, then you've got to take more time off. So it's either unpaid leave or you have to then take it as holiday, you know, additional holiday.
Yeah, it's a really difficult situation, isn't it? And I guess it's one of the many things that adds to the frustration and anger of passengers when they're let down, you know, going on holiday and what have you. It's one of the big things of modern life. But as you say, there's not even really an off-the-shelf kind of solution for it, is there? In all honesty, it's a value judgment in a lot of cases.
Absolutely. You've got to go and, you know, take into account the circumstances, the person you're dealing with, you know, your scenario, because you might find actually you've not got somebody covering and actually you're delighted their holiday's been cancelled. But yeah, you've got to remember they're still then going to take their holiday at another point. So you could then end up with holiday congestion again, which is something that was a concern during COVID.
Yeah, absolutely. It's just as a thought, is that something that you ought to write into your employment contract?
Well, you have got to put in information about holiday entitlement into a contract, and that's by law. So you've got to say what the holiday entitlement is. What you would normally do is set out, you know, you're entitled to so many days. You might have a requirement that you want people to take holidays over Christmas and New Year, so you've got to make sure that's covered off as well. Yeah. And you'll have other information that's usually in the contract, but then you'll have a more detailed policy in your handbook normally. And that's where you might put in information like that. For example, if your holiday's been cancelled by the operator, you know, you should not assume that you'll be able to then cancel your holidays. Yeah. You might even say that you want to, you know, put in a specific period by which you can cancel your holidays. So if you've booked it in well in advance, you know, you need to give us so many weeks' notice to cancel a holiday. But again, you know, it's tricky doing a one size fits all, because it might depend on circumstances that your business is in at the time as to what you decide to do. But yeah, you can certainly warn people. I mean, you know, obviously what you should be doing is telling people not to book a holiday until they've got their holidays approved by you, because, you know, they might not be able to get the holidays. So, I mean, that's been well known for years. What we've now got is this other scenario where things are changing at the last minute. You know, I was heading up to Scotland and there was a couple next to me that were obviously heading off on some long sunny holiday because they had a lot of suitcases with them, and they got told they might not get on the flight, and they were horrified. You know, but that's what used to happen. I think it was probably in the 80s and the 90s with standby and various tickets you used to get. We used to turn up and there's no guarantee you were going to get on. Yeah. We're now in a scenario where we're sort of facing uncertainty. So yeah, as I think as a business, you've got to think about being a bit, again, more agile in dealing with these situations, which might be unexpected, but actually become more of the norm that we get used to.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, this is a horrible question, and you might not have any more idea than me, but I just wondered, from a legal point of view, holiday companies or airlines or whoever it is that's doing the cancellation at the last minute, I mean, what kind of liability do they have? I mean, I know that, you know, if a plane breaks down or a war breaks out or something happens that prevents them flying, you know, yeah, it's part of life. But for instance, in this particular scenario that we're seeing unfold at the moment, where there's massive queues at airports in, you know, in London and Schiphol and America and what have you, due to the airlines having fired all their staff during COVID and not hired anyone because they now can't get anyone. I mean, have you any thoughts on that, you know, what their legal liability is? Because they shouldn't really have been taking bookings if they can't make the flights.
Well, that's what the government is arguing, certainly. Well, at the moment, I believe we've still got the rules that applied when we were in part of the EU, where there's a sort of maximum compensation limit. I mean, it's difficult to understand how you can compensate someone if, for example, as we heard on the news recently, somebody's flight was cancelled and it meant that their son had missed GCSE exams that they were due to do. How do you compensate somebody for that? You can't really. So I think, you know, there's an argument as consumers, we have to take on board the lack of certainty at the moment. And when you're booking, allow for some extra time on the way back just in case you get delayed. But there might well be a case that comes through as a result of this that means that, you know, airlines have to take a different perspective, because they might say that those limits that previously applied don't apply in these circumstances because of the circumstances in which they allowed the disruption to occur. But again, it depends on, you know, the airline involved, what the reason was as to why the flight was cancelled, etc. And again, we don't know the ins and outs of all of that, unfortunately.
Sure, absolutely. Difficult situation. And now, of course, that potentially could be extremely exacerbated by this move that a number of companies have started talking about, which is a move to unlimited holidays.
Yeah, I mean, it's been around in the past. There's been some companies have used it. Virgin were one of the ones that sort of started doing it, and it got a lot of attention. But the irony is what you actually find is that people take less holidays as a result of moving to an unlimited holiday policy. And the other thing you've got to be very careful around is, you know, the whole point in having minimum amounts of holidays imposed on us. I mean, again, it was driven by EU legislation, the working time regulations, but it was around the health and safety aspects and making sure that people get some time off work. And, you know, there's a danger if you do the unlimited holidays that you could end up falling foul of that by not making sure that somebody takes at least the minimal amount of time off.
Right.
And then also you've got the other end of the scale where you get somebody who's taking far too much time off.
Yeah.
How do you then assess that? Now, you know, in a in an environment where you can measure productivity, such as, you know, we do time recording, so we know, you know, how much time people are obviously recording at work. And therefore, you know, over the year, somebody can actually meet their targets and possibly have a lot of holidays without it obviously interrupting, you know, their performance. But yeah, if you're not on the, in that situation, then, you know, you might find one member of the team taking a lot of time off and the other members of the team getting a bit upset about the fact that they're having to cover for them taking time off. So it could take a lot of management around it, and for possibly not a lot in return. And in fact, as I say, you might even find some people are taking less time off, which is not perhaps where you wanted it to be.
Yeah, absolutely. It's one of those things that I think potentially has a lot of issues because, it, as you quite rightly say, it requires management, and it requires a lot of management time to start to manage some of these things. And I think, you know, is that time well spent? Is, you know, for small businesses, have they even got the time to do it? I have to say, in my businesses, I don't really record people's holidays. So people ring me up or email me and go, can I have 3 days off, or I'm away next week, or I've got 2 weeks, or I'll go, yeah, whatever. Because I don't really mind what time they take off, and my people have never really, you know, abused that. I've had people that have had quite a lot of time off for, you know, particular reasons. But they've always said, you know, look, you know, can I have 3 weeks holiday because I've got a personal problem or whatever.
And are you confident that you think you know that they've taken off at least the sort of minimum amount of time they should be taking off each year?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, a lot of that kind of gets covered with bank holidays and stuff, because all of my people have the bank holidays off and Christmas and stuff. But you're right, you're right. You know, if I was really honest, I don't actually know how many days they've had off. I know that they've all been on holiday because they've all, you know, I've got emails saying I'm away next week or whatever.
I think it's one of these things. I do, you know, it could well be a lot of these businesses. There's a number of reasons why they've been introducing it. One is there are concerns, particularly with, you know, organisations like Goldman Sachs, where they've been, where they've just recently introduced it for their senior staff, so partners only. And they're concerned about the mental health impact of people working long hours. So what they're saying is you should be able to take extra time off when you want to take time off. The other reason why it might be getting introduced is because it's quite trendy and it's seen as a good thing to do. It's an additional benefit. And so to attract the right staff, you might be thinking, what else can I do, you know, within my benefits package that actually makes me stand out from the crowd and make me more attractive? As well as saying, you know, for health, mental health reasons, it's a good thing to have in place. I'd be interested to see if we revisit this, though, in a few years' time as to what has happened. And likewise, similarly, with the 4-day working week, it's going to be interesting to see what happens with that, because obviously we've got this new trial that has just started with lots of different types of businesses paying people the same amount of money, but for working for 4 days instead of 5 days, to see if it does mean that there's no impact on productivity, which is what the general consensus is at the moment.
It made me smile when you said about Goldman Sachs and their senior management holiday. I don't know if you know, I used to be a senior manager at Goldman Sachs, and when I saw that, it made me laugh out loud. An organisation like that can announce whatever they want. Whether the staff do it or not is a completely different matter, because if you actually went off on holiday, they'd go loopy.
Well, I mean, you know, I think you're absolutely right. You can announce these things, but, it, you know, and of course they could say, well, we've not prevented anybody doing it.
Yeah.
But of course, there are other ways in which you can express yourselves as to how, what your view is on someone. I mean, the other thing that they've done is they've sort of introduced a sort of Saturdays off policy for more junior members of staff. And again, that was designed to try and stop their staff working 7 days a week. And they're saying they expect staff to stop emailing and accessing their email and after 9 o'clock on Friday night until, I believe it's 9 o'clock on Sunday morning. Now, of course, you can do that. You can introduce these sort of policies by blocking access to emails and saying, you know, again, you know, but if you're just saying to them, we don't expect you to do it, then that's different, because you're right, it could continue and nobody's necessarily going to pick up on it and say, you know, stop emailing. But there is this thing about the right to disconnect, which has been taken up by a lot of European countries and introduced laws where people can say, actually, I don't want to receive emails out of hours. Yeah. And I'm perfectly entitled to say that. I've got that right. And then you've got other countries where businesses have actually taken the view, we're not just going to have that as a right that somebody can exercise, but actually we are going to block emails. So, for example, Volkswagen has done that, you know, where they'll block emails after 6 o'clock at night and before 8 o'clock in the morning. But of course, the flip side of that is if you've got someone who likes flexible working, and because there might be a parent and they want to spend time with their children, you know, before 6 o'clock, they are quite happy emailing after 8 o'clock because that works better for them. Yeah. So, you know, again, it's not a one size fits all. It works for all these.
And that's the problem. You're absolutely right. I mean, I'm laughing my head off here, basically, because I worked in that environment. But the point about it is that my job, I was head of IT. If you blocked our emails over the weekend, nothing would happen. On Monday morning, you wouldn't have a system, you know, because that out of hours is a lot of the time that we actually change things or implement new things or mention things. Now, okay, you can cover some of that by having shift work, but you don't have senior management on shift. I mean, you know, you have a team on shift. And so you're absolutely right, not just with Goldman, but any organisation, any large organisation, and any large multinational organisation. If you think about investment banking trades 24 hours a day. From London, they move to Hong Kong, from Hong Kong to New York, and so on. So the trading systems have to be running 24 hours a day. You can't just go, well, at 9 o'clock, we're just not going to talk to anyone anymore. Doesn't work. So, this is the problem with all of these trendy things that are happening in employment, is that you've got to incorporate the reality of operating your business within them. And then that puts a big management overhead on it. But it also, my thing, and I think you kind of touched on this, is it can breed staff resentment. Mm-hmm. Because those of us that can't do it, so those of us that can't work from home, or those of us that can't do a four-day week, or those of us that can't have unlimited holidays, get very resentful of those that can.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I used to work for a US law firm, and, you know, and it was working with, you know, financial institutions that we just referred to as well. You know, and I think, there, as you say, you've got to be globally available, so to speak, for when there are, you know, things need to be done urgently, you know, but you go into these things with your eyes open.
Sure.
Because, you know, certainly when I joined, that's the expectation.
Yeah.
You will be paid well, but there is an expectation that you're going to have to work the hours that are required when required. Yeah. Now, of course, you know, I would have thought that anyone that's a partner in one of these businesses has gone through that process of knowing what's expected and why they've made it to partnership.
Yeah.
However, I mean, in years gone by, once people made it up to certain senior levels, to some extent, you didn't work as hard as the more junior staff that were trying to get promoted.
Yeah.
Now, I do question whether that has now changed. And therefore, are we now facing a situation where we've got a lot of senior people that in the past might have been able to sort of take their foot a little bit off the pedal whilst the younger staff are sort of working their way up the ladder, so to speak. Yeah. And perhaps that's not happening as much. And therefore, you've got to avoid burnout and retain your senior staff. To train your more junior staff, you've got to take a different approach for them.
Yeah, absolutely. You're absolutely right. I mean, the implied contract, it was never stated explicitly, but the implied contract in my day, which was a long time ago, to be fair, was that we pay you a huge amount of money and we expect you to do what we ask you to do. And that was very true. You know, I still do not earn today what I earned 30 years ago working for them. But by the time I was 35, I couldn't do it anymore. And you know, what you saw in those big institutions, everybody kind of knew that. That as a young person, you worked 18 hours a day, you earned truckloads of money, and then you, after a while, you went off and did something sensible for a lot less money. it's a situation that needs managing, and of course, every industry is slightly different. It there's just so many things in it, isn't it? And the problem I have with all of this is that it's an announcement is made, you know, XYZ Corporation is now going to have unlimited holidays, or, you know, ZWX Corporation is going to have a 4-day week. And then they announce that publicly, and then everybody goes, well, why can't we have it? You know, nobody thinks about the ramifications of their organization or even their job. Yeah. What impact would that have on my job if I was only doing it 4 days a week? You know, would I have to work four times as hard to make up for the day I'm missing? We don't think those things through.
Well, we don't, and that's why they're doing that big trial at the moment. The government are funding it, well, certainly supporting it. But they're, and I'm sure they will be funded to some extent, but that's what's happening at the moment, is they're trying to figure out, actually, is there some truth in what they're saying about productivity not being reduced as a result of working 4 days, but you're still getting paid 5 days, but would that change in the future? Would they say, well, actually, we're only doing 4 days, we're only going to pay you 4 days?
Yeah.
You know, without government legislation on that, that would be a possibility. But I think it will depend on each industry as well. So what they've done is they've said, we're going to take different businesses, different organisations, and assess them to see whether it's actually matches up to what people are saying about the, you know, no impact on productivity. But, you know, I think it's obviously still a very challenging labour market. You know, it's very difficult to get staff. I think businesses are now possibly changing the way they approach things to retain staff and taking steps and measures they might not have done in the past because they need to hold on to their current staff. So, you know, there's concerns, for example, that you get staff that are misbehaving at work, carrying out assaults, doing things that are really serious, but employers are backing off from dismissing them because they don't want to lose a member of staff because they can't recruit somebody else.
Yeah.
You know, and that's going to have a massive impact on businesses and how they operate moving forward. And you know, but again, the other way to look at that is, you know, if you've got somebody that's going around potentially assaulting staff at work and you're not actually dismissing them, are other members of staff going to want to continue to work with them?
Yeah.
Because if they can get jobs somewhere else and they find someone else that actually treats their staff better, then they'll move on. So there's a lot of short-term decision-making going on that's almost panic-driven because it's, I don't want to lose this number of staff. What am I going to do? How am I going to, you know, hold on to them? But actually thinking ahead, which is, you know, similar to what you're saying about, you know, making decisions about 4-day weeks, unlimited holidays, etc. Have you actually thought it all the way through and considered, as you say, the ramifications and the long-term impact?
Yeah, it's for me, a lot of this is driven by social media and the whole thing of public announcements about everything. And you see it, you know, I don't want to get into the politics of it, but, you know, there are companies about that have been putting, you know, different things on their logo profiles supporting various what are called woke initiatives. Apart from the fact that they don't do it in the countries that aren't interested in stuff like that. And of course, people on social media have been pointing that out and going, okay, well, if you believe in it, why don't you believe in it in Saudi Arabia when you do believe in it in Holland? You know, how does that work? And for me, it's not so much that issue. It's the whole issue of reputation of businesses is now in the public domain. So I want to finish off, if I may, Pam, just talking about, you know, bringing your business into disrepute because, you know, you can say stuff. I'll give you a classic example that I saw on Twitter recently. There was a TV and radio presenter called Matthew Stadlin, and he was offered a job by the BBC. And everybody on Twitter went absolutely mad because he'd been incredibly political. And that's okay to some extent, but he'd also been offering to fight people and claiming he was MMA and martial arts trained. And if you argued with him, he'd come and sort you out. And the BBC withdrew the job offer due to the weight of complaint. I mean, I have two issues about that. One, what happened to your due diligence when you were hiring him, for goodness sake, BBC? You know, you didn't really pay a lot of attention to that, did you? But two, it's this greater thing of everything being in public now. And, you know, the effect that that has on a business. Yeah. So if someone, you know, if he'd have actually started work for the BBC, can you imagine the outcry that would happen at a time when the BBC is trying to fight to retain its license, and then they, you know, they, something like that happens. So I'd like your thoughts on bringing your business into disrepute, I suppose.
So, I mean, you know, we're all entitled to a private life.
Yeah.
To some extent, we've got, you know, under the Human Rights Act, you've got a right to privacy. You've got a right to family life. But there is a line sometimes you can overstep, and as a result, you could find that you're then getting questioned about whether you're actually suitable to be continued to gain employment with the business. So, you know, for example, we've seen some cases recently involving the police. One in particular where he was dismissed after, I think it was 19 years service for gross misconduct. And it was principally around the concerns about bringing the police into disrepute, but also running a business. So his business involved basically him and his partner advertising services, sexual services. And the police found out about it. First of all, he hadn't disclosed it as a business interest. And they said, well, it was a business because he was offering, you know, to provide sex in return for money. And then secondly, they said it was, you know, serious risk of bringing the police into disrepute because of what he was doing, because arguably it was potentially a crime that he was carrying out. Yeah. So, and then there's been numerous other cases like that involving people where they've got a job that requires them to present an image, operate in a particular way, because that's consistent with the organisation. But actually, in their private life, they have been operating in a different way, which has then become public or could become public, which means that they are then potentially going to damage the business's reputation by association. So it comes out, obviously, if you've got a police officer, pretty obviously they're working with the police, you know, but you might have somebody who is advertising services, such as he was doing, but it's got nothing to do with the business that they do, the job that they do for that for their particular employer. So, you know, unless there was some way of associating it with the business, then it'd be difficult to argue that they've carried out an act of gross misconduct, because what they've been doing is doing something in their private life that had nothing to do with the business and couldn't be associated with it. Yeah. But of course, the more stuff we have out on social media about ourselves, the easier it is to make that association, which means that your private life becomes more entwined with, you know, your job. So, you know, obviously things like LinkedIn, we put up a lot of information on that, and it's, you know, supposed to be a professional website, but equally there's a lot of stuff out there about who you are, and you can easily Google, it'll pop up, or do a search on LinkedIn. So you can then make it more easy as an employer to say, well, actually, we think you're potentially going to bring us into disrepute because we can't be associated with somebody who does this. But it's not, again, it's like a lot of areas in employment law and HR, it's not a black and white scenario. It very much depends on the job, what you've been doing in your private life, and how, therefore, you could end up potentially losing your job by bringing the business into disrepute.
Yeah, absolutely. It's just such a minefield, isn't it? Because, you know, it could even come down to your behaviour, if you see what I mean, on social media, you know, how you talk to people, the kind of things you say, you know, you might, you know, everyone's entitled to a political view, everyone. But it's how you state that, isn't it? And what you put in your profile and how you identify yourself.
And it does very much come down to, I think a lot of people forget that when they're putting stuff up on social media platforms, they are public forums quite often. They're not private conversations. You know, if you know, and I think, you know, it's the same with anything, you know, emails, WhatsApp messages, texts. A lot of people forget that these things can come back to bite you.
Absolutely. But,
you know, they can. I mean, we regularly obviously are dealing with situations with tribunals or investigations where we're saying, well, we need access to your emails, you know, we need to see the WhatsApp messages, we need to see text messages. And a lot of people saying, yeah, but it was done on a private phone. Well, yes, it wasn't a private phone, but it's in connection with work, and therefore it will be disclosable. Yeah. So, you know, you are going to have to release that. So, you know, I suppose as a sort of final parting shot for the day, think twice before you do anything, either on social media, because it's there and it's going to be there, you know, for a long time, unless you've been able to get it deleted. And whatever you do, you know, the same with WhatsApp messaging, text messaging, emails. it can be used as evidence against you later.
Absolutely, and just from my own personal experience, and I need this beaten into my head. Last week, somebody posted something on Twitter that was factually totally incorrect, and all I did was I said, "Actually, that's not true," and here's a link to the evidence. Well, I spent 4 days being inundated with people going, "Ah, oh, you haven't read it properly." Yes, I have. I wrote it. I know what it says. And all of a sudden, you're embroiled in an argument that you didn't intend to be embroiled in the first place. And I'm the kind of person that I won't just back out of it. I go, "No, you're wrong." But the point is, there was no point in it. I never persuaded anybody that the facts were the facts, because they didn't want to know the facts. They wanted to know their own opinion. So having the argument was pointless. It wasted a huge amount of my time. And then somebody started to get nasty about it, posting my personal address on Twitter, and, you know, tried to start a pile on. And I have to say, because I'm going to say it, I reported that to Twitter, and Twitter said it wasn't a violation of their terms, which it clearly is, because it clearly says it in their terms, you shouldn't post someone's private address. But for some reason, they decided not to uphold that in this case, but there you go. So I agree, Pam, you know, we've got to be more circumspect about what we do. And whilst it, you know, whilst it's annoying to see things that you don't agree with, you know, you've got to weigh up, is it worth my while bothering to say anything about this? Because, you know, it's like arguments about politics, religion and football are pointless, because you're not going to change anybody's mind. You know, you're never going to get an Arsenal supporter go, "Do you know what? You're right. I should have been supporting Spurs." It just isn't ever going to happen. Yeah, you're right. But from an employer's point of view, is there anything we can do, should we be thinking about doing with our contracts of employment to actually mitigate some of this from our company's point of view?
Yeah, there's a few things you should be doing. I mean, first of all, you know, in your contract, you should put in some clauses in there around the use of social media and obviously, you know, acting as an ambassador for the business at all times. So not just, you know, events in person, but also online when they're communicating. And also you can put in something there as well that means that they can't put up disparaging comments about either you or the business and or employees while they're employed or after their employment ends. And that's something that, you know, we would encourage you to do, put that in as a contractual obligation. Now, a lot of employers don't have that, so happy to talk to anybody about it, but that's something you should be putting in. And then also you need to have a social media policy, which sets out examples of behaviour that is not acceptable, so people understand, because a lot of people will assume that everybody else operates by their sort of standards. Yeah. Quite often people have varying, you know, different levels of what they think is acceptable behaviour and what's not. So you as an employer, you need to set out in a policy what's acceptable, what's not acceptable, and how somebody should be behaving, so that it's very clear. And then obviously, if that doesn't happen, you can point to the policy. I mean, what I tend to find now is that, you know, when I first started doing this over 25 years ago, people didn't look at handbooks. They weren't interested. Yeah. Now it's the first thing that employees go to. They, before they come to you, they look and see, is there a policy on this and what does the policy say? So, you know, you've got to make sure that you've got your stamp on what you expect from your employees, and then make sure you manage it consistently. Because right. There's no point in having a policy if you actually inconsistently apply it, because then you're going to get mayhem and misbehaviour that you can't then manage effectively.
It's funny you should say that about company handbooks. I was having a clear out the other day, a couple of weeks ago, and I found a company handbook for a company I worked for 40 years ago. And it was still sealed in the plastic. It still had the plastic wrapping around. I'd never opened it.
That is my case.
Yeah. They probably have a contract of employment in there as well.
It'd be interesting to do a comparison with 40 years ago as to what it is like now. And I'm sure it's a much thicker handbook that you have now.
Yeah. It actually could be quite interesting to see what they were worried about back then, wouldn't it?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Pam, as always, it's a pleasure to talk to you, and always highly informative. Thank you so much for that. Just give us a shout out for your website so that people can find out more about the work you do at Locke Associates.
Thank you. It's www.lockassociates.co.uk.
Fantastic. Pam, enjoy the rest of your week. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you very much for asking me.
Pam Locke there of Locke Associates, talking about holidays, unlimited holiday working, 4-day weeks, and also about reputation management, I guess is a way to talk about it. So lots of things that came out there, and very interesting talking to Pam.
And Tracy Ferguson is listening in. She probably got a little nice little bit of lunch now, and she says, as always, a very interesting conversation with Pam at Locke Associates. She certainly knows her stuff. Very insightful points. Great to hear your experiences too, Paul, especially around holidays. I always had to plan my staff holidays very carefully to ensure retail service cover. Retail, do you remember that? I was just thinking, you know, as I'm newly tanned, I'd, you know, kind of wanted a brighter dress or something. And I thought, there's nowhere in Canterbury I could go. There's no Monsoon anymore. There's no Topshop. There's nowhere I can actually go. There's Fenix, but I'm not great on Fenix really for clothes. But
M&S.
I know I'm of the age, but I miss Monsoon. Just going in and trying on a dress, or Topshop. I used to get my sunglasses from there and just go in and try them on. So actually, the days of going in and trying on a dress for you, Paul Andrews,
I've stopped doing it.
And me have gone.
I've stopped doing it.
Yeah,
we got an interesting tweet here from someone I don't know, talking about your favourite subjects of the moment.
What is it?
It's from somebody called Andrew Bevan. And
he's a farmer.
Yeah.
Beefy farmer.
He said, we used treated biosolids in one form or another for over 20 years on our farm before I retired, mostly free from the local works, mainly on our grassland and forage maize. We used to sell our beef to Waitrose and they were okay with it.
I wonder if they knew.
Yeah.
And that makes me feel a bit goosey about that. And I'm going to have to ask our friends Riverford Organic what they use on their things, because I would have just thought that, you know, you are what you eat. And, you know, with I saw the queue today as I drove here for Kentucky, and whatever anybody says, I don't think it's very good to eat processed food particularly. So they're getting a lot of chemicals in packet food. I smelt someone doing a pot noodle the other day and it smelled awful. Pot noodle,
terrible.
Yeah, although when I got back, I was quite tired from Ibiza and just travelling tires you, doesn't it? Planes and things. And I was craving sugar, absolutely craving. So we had to buy some Jubilee Dairy Milk. And I realised once you start on sugar and,
You're just reeled in, aren't you?
Yeah, because I've got Bouja, which is quite healthy and I can only eat three of them, but I can eat a whole bar of Cadbury's Dairy Milk.
She's really having a go at me because I bought her a box of chocolates for her birthday. Yeah, that's what she's doing.
I'm going to loll in bed later on my chaise longue and eat the lot, scoff the lot without, and drink the Prosecco, of course.
Absolutely. I've had a tweet from Tracy Ferguson, who says, as always, a very interesting conversation with Pam Locke of Locke Associates. She certainly knows her stuff. She absolutely does. Very insightful points. Great to hear your experiences too, Paul, especially around holidays. I always had to plan my staff holidays very carefully to ensure retail service cover.
I did just read that.
I thought you might have done. Yeah,
but did you get a little feeling of deja vu?
When I got to the retail bit, that was the bit I heard you say before.
And Andrew Bevan, the beefy farmer, says they used to dump it in the sea years before then. Yeah. And I retorted, they still do in Whitstable.
Yeah.
Because they do. We often get told not to swim.
Yeah.
Why
not join Sue Hainsby and keynote speaker Gemma Fairclough-Haynes for a Women in Business brunch? This is taking place this Thursday, the 9th of June, at the Burlington Hotel in Folkestone. If you want to find out more or to book, go to kentbusinessradio.co.uk/calendar.
And there is a Gravesham Business Network, Gravesham, on the 14th of June. It's the Gravesham Business Networking Meeting. It's open to all SMEs in the area, or SMEs if you prefer. It's a summer business networking event. It'll be held at the new Legions Rooms venue as part of their India Supper Club. For those with a love for authentic Indian Punjabi cuisine, of which we all love, whether you're an established local business you've just started or whether you're new to the area, please do come along and enjoy an evening of local networking at one of Gravesend's most prestigious venues. And they've had about 50 plus, they say. So you can go to kentbusinessradio.co.uk/calendar to find out more about that.
Cool. Local British superbike racer Tom Ward has raised £2,550 for Kenwood Trust. Tom Ward, British Superbike racer, 27 years old and based in Kent, has been racing since he was 7 and races in the Pirelli National Superstock Championship, which is a class within the British Superbike Series. In April, to mark the beginning of the season, all of Tom's sponsors gathered at Pegwell Bay Hotel to celebrate the start of the season. During an auction on the night and raffle, a massive £2,550 was raised for Kenwood Trust. Kenwood Trust is a residential drug and alcohol rehabilitation centre based in Yalding, offering a supported residential environment for men and women. The charity's team are highly skilled and experienced at supporting individuals through the delicate and challenging processes of change within a safe and supported environment. So a huge thank you to Tom Ward, Superbike racer, for raising a fantastic amount for Kenwood Trust.
And volunteers and businesses are needed for the Go Green Information Centre. This is the Maidstone Borough Council. They're on the lookout for volunteers and businesses to help run and be part of a pop-up Green Information Centre. Other colours are available. This will be located in a currently empty retail unit in the town centre. Lots of empty retail units in town centres.
There's plenty to go around.
And so this information, the Go Green Information Centre, will help anyone who may be confused, sceptical or doesn't know where to start with becoming more green and sustainable. People will be able to drop by for advice, resources and to see and find out about solutions, products and services already available that can help them become more sustainable. James Wilderspin, now there's a name, Wilderspin, he's a biodiversity and climate change manager at Maidstone Borough Council, and he said there's already so much drive and knowledge within the community. We want to find local volunteers who are passionate about climate change to run the Go Green Centre. We would like our volunteers to give out information on how to reduce energy bills, encouraging active travel, reducing carbon footprints, using sustainable products, answering questions and offering advice. We would also love sustainable businesses to showcase and demonstrate their goods and services for free to reach local people to create clarity and confidence in making greener choices. So you can email James on James Wilderspin, that's Wild, E-R-S-P-I-N, at maidstone.gov.uk. And he also says if you've got products and services you'd like to showcase or would like to volunteer and be part of this exciting project, please get in touch. So, yeah, green. I tell you what, it opened my eyes in Spain, of course, because the amount of plastic water bottles, because their drinking water isn't potable,
good,
really.
Yeah.
And plastic bottles just everywhere.
The owners of Manston Airport say they're baffled. They are baffled. Their offer to again provide the site for lorry parking during Operation Brock has been snubbed by the Department of Transport.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, the government have recently approached River Oak asking if the facilities could be made available to help ease long HGV queues and tailbacks on the M20. But the company says it's heard nothing back from the government at all, which is typical.
Yes. Well, it's also during the pandemic at the height, there were people that were offering all sorts of services that didn't ever get an answer.
It's incredibly frustrating.
It is.
It's almost as if it's deliberate.
There's a pause for thought.
It is.
What is the reason behind the deliberation?
Everywhere you look.
In your opinion?
Well, Highways England, who are responsible for this, are the most useless organisation on the planet.
Yeah.
You've only got to look at the potholes in the road to see that.
And the various road closures and constant digging up and everything.
At times, are the most inconvenient.
Yeah.
And if you remember, back in 2015, when we had a massive 7 weeks, people asked Highways England to put in a contraflow system.
Mm.
And they said, no, you can't do that, it's dangerous. Right? So, having suffered all of that, what did they then do? After it was over, they put in a contraflow system for 2 years, which reduced the motorway down to two lanes for no reason whatsoever, until we got another problem at Dover, and then they took it out again.
No.
And you go, there's something not right here.
No, there's just
something not right.
Well, I'm amazed by the amount of freight on the roads. It must have trebled. I mean, every other vehicle is a lorry, isn't it?
Yeah, well, it's noticeable because for 2 years there was nothing about.
Okay.
Yeah, because we were locked down. And
it does seem an awful lot, though. I mean, today when I was driving, it was nearly all freight.
what I was just going to explain is the numbers. In a full year without pandemics and all the rest of it, Dover Western Docks ferries, roll on, roll off ferries, handle approximately 1.7 million trucks a year.
Okay.
On the same piece of road.
That's a lorry, not a truck.
On the same piece of road, yeah, Le Chateau Eurotunnel handles 2.2 million trucks.
Wow.
So you're talking 3.5 million trucks down the A20, which is a two-lane piece of road, which Highways England then reduced to one lane.
And in their wisdom.
And everybody goes, oh, it's this or that that's caused it. You know, the road structure to Folkestone and Dover, where the two places are, is not adequate for the volume of traffic.
No, that's right. And meanwhile, Manston just sits there festering.
Yeah.
I can't see it ever being an airport again.
We need, no.
It'll be a housing.
They are waiting for a licence to open it as a freight airport again, but the government haven't got around to it.
And I still, I say this all the time, but I still think we need to use our waterways more, you know, for freight and stuff like that.
Sure. Foreign exchange and meeting your currency needs. Currency UK, one of the leading foreign exchange experts with 21 years of experience, will host Tunbridge Wells' latest free business masterclass at the Finance Hub offices on the Pantiles. Driven by a mission to make foreign exchange accessible, safer and more cost-effective for businesses and private individuals, the speaker event will provide clarity, knowledge and support for anyone with any level of overseas dealings, from international trade to buying a property abroad. It'll also focus on providing industry-leading advice for how to shield fees and income against a volatile global market. The topics for this event will include currency volatility and why it matters to your income, the impact of COVID-19 and Brexit on foreign exchange, how to benefit from foreign exchange rates, market outlook for 2022, risk-reducing solutions for international investors. Foreign exchange and meeting your currency needs will take place on Thursday, that's this Thursday, the 9th of June, 5:30 p.m. to 7 p.m. at the Finance Hub, Tunbridge Wells.
And the lovely love-struck Casey Canine has said, how about a bee bunker mentioned for a love-struck greyhound? And then also they've had a pit stop, Casey Canine, 2014. He's had a little pit stop with Doris and the Egypt. And he's been, I think he's been to a Bottega Montalbano in Tenterden. Yeah. Do you know that? Looks very nice. Is it Italian?
Montalbano's an Italian restaurant. And Bottega is owned by the same people behind it. And it's like an ice cream parlour and bistro.
Delicious. Looks very nice.
Yeah, very nice.
Indeed.
What's your dog called?
Darcy.
That's him.
Her.
Oh.
Madam Darcy.
Oh, okay.
There's an iconic firm, Hornby Hobbies, and they've secured a £12 million funding boost as it continues to turn around its once flagging fortunes. The company's based in Margate and it's been struggling, but after an overhaul of its management in 2017, it's seen a growth in sales and last year delivered its first profits in 9 years. Founded in 1901... Its brand stable now includes Hornby, Corgi, Airfix, Scalectrics and Humbrol. It's now secured a £12 million loan, a £12 million combined facility from Secure Trust Bank Commercial Finance, which specialises in lending money to businesses in the UK. Margate, I noticed, topped for house prices.
Yeah. They've gone through the roof.
Rocketed. It's a nice little town.
Yeah, we've started the whole thing on poo now.
Have we indeed? How lovely before lunch.
Yeah, Dawny Browning has said, my mum told me this very week that my dad used to get treated poo sludge from a place in Lancashire and use it on our veggie allotment back in the 60s and 70s. Best tasting pea pods I've ever had.
Oh.
We feed our crop with chook poo as well as worm poo and wee.
Well, I'd rather chook poo and worm poo than human poo, wouldn't you? It's just like, what is everybody excreting?
I tell you what, listening to the Business Bunker show.
Very unsavoury today.
It's one of those things, isn't it?
Yeah, it's put me right off my ginger biscuit.
Sorry about that. Anyway, we've reached the end of another show. Thank you so much. I want to say a huge thank you to our two guests this week. Mr. Simon Pollard of View Over the Wall Experiences, Pam Locke of Locke Associates, my stalkingly gorgeous co-host, Jill Serkin. We'll be back with another Business Bunker show next week. But for the moment, Enjoy your week, and we'll see you all soon.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
The Business Bunker with Paul Andrews.
This is Channel 2.